Welcome to the Playing Injured podcast, where we have conversations that help people turn their adversity into their advantage.
Welcome to another episode of Playing Injured. If this is your first time plugging in, we just want to thank you, Josh and I, from the bottom of our hearts for taking a chance on the Playing Injured podcast, listening in. We know we have a great episode in store for you here today. If you've been a follower and committed follower of the Playing Injured podcast, we thank you earnestly. And we just pray that whatever you are plugging in for is getting used well. And please go out there and find podcasts that you just really enjoy, that you feel like you can get some meat from and some value from. Today, I have the pleasure of my friend Andrew McKinney here to chat a little bit about some of the ups and downs and things he's gone through in life. Andrew has a background. He works for a nonprofit in the AI space right now. He'll maybe speak to that a little bit about his background, some of his experiences. Very importantly, he's an Enneagram 7, if you know what that is. So I'm excited to engage. That's basically what my wife is. So it'll be fun to engage with you. And I actually really fittingly prior athlete, ex-football player. So Andrew, welcome to the Playing Injured pod.
Yeah, thanks, Mason. I appreciate you and Josh for having me on. I was really excited. The name of the podcast was enough for me to get excited about engaging. So I really appreciate it.
You bet, man. Well, it's a blessing to have you on here. And, I know we had a little small talk beforehand and you're like, how do you find people? And man, it's guys like you, women like you that are just active on social media. For me, that's LinkedIn, and willing to take a chance on us too. So it's an equal give and take there.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's cool that you picked LinkedIn as your platform and that you're doing, podcast and, building your brand these last couple of years. I've definitely engaged a little bit on the podcast. I was actually newer to the podcast, so feel really fortunate to be, on this episode, given that you've been doing this for a couple, 2-3 years. The other thing I wanted to say is the guest that you had on this previous podcast. Can you remind me of his name again?
It's Michael Bergman.
So Michael, I listened to his podcast. I didn't get all the way through it, but I got about halfway through it. And man, just hearing kind of like-minded people, and what they've went through and just guttural stories. And it just makes me, hold this time with you and I pretty dear, man, because if anyone has been through anything that's heavy, there's a sensitivity, there's definitely a grace to hold those conversations in such a way that you're respectful of the pain and the trauma that people have walked through. And so much appreciated and just super excited about this conversation.
Yeah. No doubt about it. And it's just pretty amazing. I think a lot of times we attract in our life the people that we either were or the ones we're becoming. And, Michael's just another great example of somebody who I think we are kindred spirits, the three of us, in a lot of ways, it sounds like. Hey, let's get a little bit into it right away. I think our audience loves to get into the meat of things. So I'm going to ask you the biggest question on the podcast kind of first, and that is, what do you think the world needs more of? And then we'll unpack that a little bit.
Sure. So I'm definitely, I try to study the world at a macro level. I would say that I'm 36 years old for context. And I would say the last 4 to 5 years, I've really been kind of honed in on the divisions in our society, right? So there's all of these pockets that I have noticed. And in my previous job, I worked at SurveyMonkey, which is now rebranded to Momentive AI or Momentive. And I was on the diversity and inclusion crew there at Momentive because I was a white guy from Texas, to be honest with you. And given the last 5 years of where we've moved as a society, I think everyone's assuming that we're just moving to a terrible place. And we are in a lot of ways. Like, there's a lot of division and strife and just churning of what's been happening, you know, in the public space. But what I'll say is, during that time on that diversity and inclusion team where I felt super out of place just because I didn't understand exactly where I fit in on the team, they were so welcoming and kind to me on that team. And I learned so much about different races and different ethnicities and complexities of the human condition. And what it made me do, I remember one time I was talking to my old VP there, and I got emotional talking about, you know, one of my friends that's local here in Texas, it's a guy named Brian Williams. And it was right in the time of where someone had been fortunately shot by a police officer. I'm trying to remember because there was so many at the time. This is a while back. I couldn't believe the pain and trauma of just Brian speaking to a group of us that were all middle-aged white guys, basically. And he just was bawling, telling about how what he had went through being an African-American in Texas and coming from California and the complexities of our, you know, where we're at. And what I would say is, being on that team, having that experience, having a tangible friend that I love and care about, like Brian is like, you know, I believe he's like 46, 47. He's my older, same age as my older brother. And just, I love the man. I love this man. Like, he's an incredible leader. And to hear him just weep and, you know, because of what's happening, it's made me really sensitive to the narrative that's happening right now. And what I mean by that is, we have to do a little bit more digging and soul searching before we're so quick to judge people. That's my takeaway, right? And I think that because I come from a background personally of maybe more of the faith persuasion, I grew up in faith, and I'm a Christian, non-denominational Christian, if anyone's interested in the background of what, you know, I profess. And I've had to really undo a lot of my assumptions of what's right and what's wrong. So I would say that I'm more unsure of a lot of things than I was, you know, maybe than I was at 20 or 25, where I feel like I knew it all. And I feel like interacting with someone like you, Mason, that has had such an amazing experience with so many different people and heard traumas and what they're going through, it's just made me want to see the world in a different way. And I want to be less judgmental and also be open to people, their emotion, what they're going through. And like, I think that's only going to help the conversation. Whereas I think a lot of people just want to see us all get along. Everyone settle down. Don't have any emotions. Does that make sense, what I'm saying?
Yeah, man. I feel every bit of that. In fact, Josh and I did Josh is African-American. Him and I did a podcast called the Battle of, or the something of two races. Right. And, sure. And we just talked pretty deeply about some of the things. One of the things he talked about on that podcast that just blew me away. And he said, when he turned 16, his dad gave him a card that said his rights. And he said, "Dad, why are you giving me this?" And he said, "Because when you get pulled over, you're going to need this." And you and I, as white you know, Americans, have you ever had that fear of being pulled over and being accused of something that you had never done before? It's like, no.
Yeah. So, never. My fear was never racially motivated, but I had a deep distrust and fear of cops because I grew up, my family grew up in government housing. So we grew up in a very small impoverished, and we wouldn't call it impoverished. I would say that's a very United States Western word, but I would just say that we grew up in a poor area of Decatur, Texas, which is my hometown. It's in Wise County. And we grew up in a $25,000 house, right? Where my parents still live there today, 35, 40 years later, they still live in that same place. And I was always like the police to me, it just meant I couldn't afford the ticket because I was always really scared, or I got that angst in my stomach that I didn't have enough money to pay for the ticket if I got it or whatever, which is, you know, people talk about white privilege and they talk about that is a privilege. It's a privilege to only be scared of just not paying something, right? Mm-hmm. To not be scared, for someone to be scared of their own life being pulled over because of a, like that card. And that was very much the same as my friend Brian mentioning to his children that, because his children are more teenage age, 13, 14, I believe, and getting up to that driving age. So I guess to tie that all back into what Josh has mentioned, I can fathom like the guttural feeling of like, oh my gosh, this $400 ticket is going to take me 6 months to pay off. My parents are going to be, you know, like that. There's that financial sensitivity, but financial sensitivity is way, way below fear of death, right? And fear of mistreatment because of the color of your skin. And so, man, just, I'm so sorry to hear that was Josh's reality growing up. And I'm more and more aware of it every day, right? It's, I posted something on LinkedIn this morning from Kai Fuentes, someone she runs the Ebony marketing group in the market research world. And it's talking about even just that little segment phrase is what she was telling us about. What I was reading and what I reposted this morning was just about speaking about the complexity of race and how it's uncomfortable for some people to speak about it. And anyway, she had 4 points and I won't go through all of it, but even the fact that we as a white, like me as a white, as a white male and people that are of different ethnicity, there's so much tension around being careful with each other. It's so beautiful once we're past that, right? It's like once we're past the initial race, your background, my background, then it's like this amazing kind of interwoven blanket, right? Of like complexity of our cultures and who we are. And so, I welcome the conversations and the uncomfortableness that comes by definition of your self-editing, right? Our self-editing brain, and it happens on both sides, right? It happens on if you're of a different ethnicity, if you're of a different religion, if you're of a different happens socioeconomically. It's just a really delicate dance. And what I love is when people lean into that and they don't try to get out of an uncomfortable conversation or posture so much that they don't even say anything. You know, it's like, that's my fear, is that we don't say anything. So I don't know if that makes sense, but that's,
yeah, it does.
That's kind of stream of consciousness of where I'm at. It's such an important topic to me. It's important, you know?
Totally. And I think it had a lot of limelight over the last, year and a half, 2 years, but in my perception, it's dipped off a bit, or there's not as much talk maybe about it. So I appreciate that you're bringing this back up. And I think it's a really good thing that still are on a lot of people's hearts. And
it was George Floyd, by the way. It was George Floyd when that happened. That was that ignited the conversation. I'm so sorry that I didn't remember that right off the bat, because it was the worst week. It's the worst week for people of color, and it was the worst week for people. I just remember tangibly feeling the weight of that event and the nation. I'm a feeler, so I can feel people's emotions and pains, and it was just a heavy time, man. To your point, and to Josh's point about growing up with that in mind, there's like a low level anxiety and a high level anxiety that we just carry if we don't address how much injustice has happened in our nation, you know, and both sides, right? Like, yeah. I think you can overdo it and become so angry that there's no one's going to connect and talk. But I think we as a society underdo it. And we have for like 30 or 40 years where no one talked about race at all. Like, if anything, people said, get over it, get over our past. And that doesn't work, right? We can't sweep who we are as a nation under the rug. We can't sweep, the ugliness of the past of where America. I'm a patriot. I love America, but you also can't deny that America is built on some foundational inconsistencies and incongruencies. And I think the more proud you are by denying how we came together as a nation, I think it's just more hurtful to people that were marginalized in that time.
And,
does that make sense? What I'm saying?
Yeah, man, that's money. I mean, I think that's so true, and you see it in the church, right? We see it.
Yes.
You know, a lack of repentance, a lack of, you know, we got the white Jesus still in a lot of places in the church. You know, I could go on and on. We've seen that. Ellie and I belong to an inner city church here in Milwaukee. It's why we live where we live, and it's how I met my wife. I met Allie through mentoring a guy that grew up in the inner city. I remember picking him up, being scared to death. Because there was gunshots going on middle of the summer here in Milwaukee where I was picking them up from, and all these preconceived things that we just need to work through. So one of the questions I have for you, Andrew, is, you know, you're a father, you're a mentor to some. I know you do mentoring, and you're involved in the church and relationships. How do you plan? What's your mindset, thought process around how do you plan to influence the next generation to lean into some of this uncomfortability when we have a generation that maybe is more sensitive to it, but also disconnected through social media and, you know, it's surface level relationships. So what are some of your thoughts as you raise kids and your own kids or kids around you, young people around you? What are some of your thoughts in terms of getting into that and making sure that there's progress made there?
Yeah, I appreciate the question. It's weird to acknowledge that I am a father. So it's I've got a little baby boy, Aiden. He's 10 months old. My wife has largely, you know, raised him. She's staying at home right now. She worked at the church that we went to. It's called Gateway Church in Southlake, Texas. So that was our church. She was on staff there for 3 years. She's an amazing, amazing mother. Ewan, by the way, kind of side note of the podcast, I hope that we could jump on a Zoom with you and your wife and that the wives could meet, because my wife, Erin, is she's a hidden gem, man. She's an author. She wrote an unreleased kids book that she is just waiting to put out there. She's a special lady. So she's raised Aiden this last, talk about someone that has went through absolute hell. She went through a couple surgeries at birth. We did 5 sonograms. We did progesterone. So if you need any, she's a child life specialist too, by the way. So if you have any questions or anything, Mason, for you and your wife, as you guys are going through this fun and happy time, but also serious time, please don't hesitate to reach out to me, Mason, and also my wife, her name is Erin, E-R-I-N, McKinney. So just want to say that I give credit where credit is due, be honored to my wife. She's incredible. Mentorship is a messy word for me. And mentorship is, it's a mutual giving. It's a reciprocal thing. It is not something where you stand over someone and share, let me teach you. No, 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 no. It's the opposite. It's mentorship to me is, has been about, you know, we talk about the, have you heard the phrasing like the kimono? I'm going to let you in my kimono, or I'm going to let you in like the, you know what I mean? Like if you go to a sauna and you put on a, you put on like a white, you know, your whatever it is, cloak, and you go in and you're, and you take it off. You're like, hey, I'm letting you in my world, right? It's not.
It seems that that's, getting a, that's getting a little personal, a little quick.
Yeah. That's so the it's not personal in that way. It's more personal. Like kimono for me is like, hey, I'm going to let you in my world, right? I'm going to like you and I are having a conversation here, right? It's, you're getting to see a little bit of my world. I'm getting to see a little bit of your world. It's just letting you in. So yeah, I definitely want to be careful about what I'm saying there. What I mean is, in my levels of mentorship growing up, it was always this kind of old school generational thing where let me show you a thing or two in a little bit of a proud and arrogant way, right? It's like I'm going to, hey, look at this kid, right? I'm going to show you how to fix this car, or I'm going to show you how to whatever. What I resonate with, I'm an emotional person, right? I have feelings. I really resonate with more people just saying like, hey, this is my scars. This is where I messed up. This is where, this is what built me, right? And this is specifically what I would encourage you to avoid. Sticking to the theme of plane injured, there's some traumatic things that happen to me as a kid that definitely inform the way I try to share, right, and be vulnerable. So I don't want to jump the gun too much, and apologies if so, but I had a couple things that happened. One was my best friend growing up. His name is Brandon Gentry. We basically, I knocked his eye out, right? I literally threw a rock and hit him accidentally. We were playing like rock fight as a kid. We were in seventh or eighth grade. That was probably the most traumatic moment of my life personally. I threw up. I literally 2 to 3 weeks of mourning what happened. It took me 2 years to come to terms with myself and all that. So since that moment with Brandon as a kid and coming back to mentorship, it's really taken me years and years and years to be able to feel like I'm worthy of helping someone, or feel like I'm a good person or whatever. Cause it was an accident. We were literally playing rock. Like, you know how your parents say, don't throw rocks. We were literally like, we were both baseball players. We loved throwing, and I was a pitcher. He was a really athletic motocross guy. And I threw a rock. We weren't trying to hit each other, but I threw it and it skipped. It literally hit him right in the eye and knocked his eye. So that made me super sensitive, like crazy sensitive moving forward. So how I think about mentorship is, like when you message me about playing injured, I'm like, man, yes, I understand that. And so that was a very traumatic, crazy event for me in the eighth grade. It took years to get over that. I threw up. I lost weight. I couldn't eat. I grieved that to a depth that probably people don't understand. And then all these years later, I get introduced to different people with different trauma, right? They might have gotten abused sexually. They might have, went through an abusive dad, or they might have been hurt by the church, or, you know, whatever it is. And all these people had to jump in and help me these last 6 to 7 years, right? I really went on E when I was 30. I was suicidal. I couldn't really function. I couldn't really do my work. I had to take a leave of absence at that time. Super depressed, like beyond depressed for years and years. And then my wife helped me kind of on the mend. Like, you know, she had her own stuff in the past where she went through some tough times. But then she's helped me kind of mend the last 4 to 5 years. And so it's so weird, man, like being asked to mentor anyone. It's taken me a really long time to be comfortable feeling like I can help, right? It's like I needed my own help for years and years and years, much less. So anyway, to answer your question, I hold it with a lot of, I try to go to the depths, man, with people, because I know what it's like to lose something precious. There's been a lot of death, you know, I've lost a couple of friends, but more so just to hold someone's sight, like, right. I did something that caused him never to see out of his right eye again, ever. Right. He is blind in that eye to this day. He's blind in that eye. We're still friends. We still talk, but it informs how I move with people, how I talk with people. I'm a sensitive person because of that, you know? And so it's been difficult for me to process, but it's also been healing to hear other people go through, you know, like the podcast before this, just other people. Everyone goes through their own hell, you know? So does that make sense?
Yeah, man, that's so powerful, Andrew. I think what I'm hearing and you know, one of the themes we've noticed as we've done this over the last couple of years and we've listened to people's stories is that whatever you believe in my belief system, God is sovereign and knows before you know at 36, he knew when you were in your 20s or teens or however old you were when you threw that rock, probably younger than your teens, right? He knew exactly what you would need at this given moment. And that story brings you down to a level of empathy and humility that literally you can never get over. Like, you're never going to be beyond that because you're always going to be reminded that you have the ability to take something away from another human being. And the fact that is a reminder, a constant reminder in your life, while it's incredibly painful and has been so challenging over the years, it's also what a great tool when you are in a mentoring relationship to get down to the level of pain of somebody else, to then be able to meet them where they're at, to then be able to take them where you want to go, like holding their hand and walking across the street is essentially what you're doing, but you need to first, they need to want to hold your hand. And the only way they're going to want to hold your hand is if they feel like you actually care and can understand where they're coming from.
Yeah. And I think there was a girl there. We were friends. It was so the guy's name is Brandon. We were neighbors essentially. So he lived like a mile away, and his stepsister was there. I'm struggling to remember her name, but I remember when it happened, it was the craziest thing, man. So I live near a rock pile. So like there's a railroad track. Okay. Yeah. You get it, right. Mm-hmm. You're from Milwaukee. So I'm sure you've seen like where they basically store the rocks near the train. I'm not sure if you've ever seen that, but we live near an underpass. So there was rocks and stuff underneath it. And we always would go, the rocks at the train, good or bad. We did that all the time. We would throw rocks at glass bottles. It was just like fun. You know, we were both pretty athletic, honestly. So it was fun to like compare, like, hey, you know, it was just such an innocent thing. And so I remember my mom always telling me over and over again, like, do not throw rocks. Like, so to your point about lesson, when someone says, do not throw rocks, or, you know, rock, whatever the saying is about glass houses, like, you know, rocks break glass houses, whatever it is, all the different analogies that you want, like when someone says like that innocent thing, like don't throw rocks or whatever, it's almost like a country phrase really down here in the South. It's like this, it's like PTSD for me. It's like, it takes me right back to that place. Cause it wasn't something we were mad about. Like we were so close. He lied to the doctor and said that it accidentally hit one other thing. No, it was like, it was me and him just playing, having fun, in a good old fashioned rock fight, which is, that lets you know how rough and tumble, like we both were, you know?
Yeah. Right.
And, when I went and saw him at the hospital, you know, he's like a country musician now and his family, and he's doing so well. We recently like reconnected, but it was such an innocent time. And I guess to my point, when it happened, we ran down the street, like me, Brandon and us and her, his half sister, stayed there, and we waited for the ambulance. And the whole time during, you know, this happening, it was absolute disaster emergency. The ambulance were coming, the police were coming, the neighbors were down. It was a neighborhood event because we have a small neighborhood, right? So everyone was outside. It was a very public, humiliating, helpless thing, right? Because we were friends. It wasn't visceral. We weren't mad at each other. It was an innocent mistake, but it will never, like you said, it will echo, right? That all my friends know about it. Everyone remembers it from my hometown. It was just a trauma. It was a trauma for him. It was a trauma for the girl that watched it. She literally watched it happen, right? So it affected her for like a year. For years, it affected it. It's something she still probably thinks about because she was a witness to it. So I say all that to say that was a big deal. And then, you know, a couple other things happened. But I just have, like, when I see a lot of times, if I look in someone's eyes, I can see trauma. I don't know if that makes sense, but I can see if someone's went through hell. I can just see it, man. And, you know, I love stopping to help if there's a homeless person or if there's someone that is like this morning, man, I got up and don't tell my wife. I guess she'll hear it on the podcast, but I paid for this home. This guy, Brian, he's a veteran and he's always around this one particular gas station, right? And I saw him last night, gave him some milk, gave him some water, prayed with him. It was 104 degrees, so he was just really having a hard time. He has cancer. He has three kids and a wife. I mean, he literally is a grown man just struggling to survive. And I went and saw him last night, you know, prayed with him. And then this morning, got him a hotel room, $60, you know. I was so excited to get up and see him and, like, just make sure he was still alive. You know, and I've lost a lot. There's been a lot of people that we've lost, like in our neighborhood. You know, this guy named Parker Fountain was the guy I used to always see. He was on meth and, you know, ripped out of his mind all the time. And I would just try to go, hey, man, are you all right? And, you know, do you need water? Do you need candy or whatever? And he passed away 2 years ago. The cops tried to help him. Everyone tried to help him. I invited him to church. He said yes, but never came. And he died. You know what I mean? So I'm just so sensitive to those wandering souls, man, those people that are kind of just around. Like you mentioned, why you moved to where you moved. Mm-hmm. You can see suffering. You can see it in people's eyes. And it's so special because those people love you, man. They love that you're even talking to them. They love that you're there. They never really want you. They'll tell you over and over again, I don't want you. I'm good. And they mean it. Because they've suffered so much that they have nothing left. They have literally nothing left but just hope for the rest of the day. It's a really humbling thing to be around. Does that make sense? Because you've been.
Yeah. You know, when I look at, you know, I think, Andrew, one of the biggest takeaways here, and we'll kind of wind down here. I look at what you've gone through, and there's so many more stories that we could unpack. I'm sure, but I just look at somebody who just really embraces trauma and has experienced trauma and can see trauma and can emotionalize it and can feel. And I think, you know, there's the saying of what, it's not so much what you say, it's what, how you make people feel, right? People don't care about what you say, but how you make
them feel. Maya Angelou.
Yeah, right. There you go. And I think you're just a walking, talking example of somebody who can really, really do that. And sometimes maybe to a fault, I'm sure there's some challenges that come with that. Just like anything, your biggest strength is your biggest weakness, right?
Always, man.
Yeah. But it's really special. So let's kind of wind down and bring it on a kind of an up note here as we go through, because that was some really good stuff. What would you say, you know, looking into the future, looking into, if anybody's listening to this and being like, man, I resonate with that. Like I've caused some people harm in my life, or I've done some things that, like, I just can't let go of. What are some things that you would encourage them on? What would be some things, you know, that you would say are kind of some steps forward or some things that they can do to really, get through that injury, of some of the things you've had to go through?
So for me, like, it's, appreciate the words, man. You're such a wordsmith. Love it. So in my mind, there's two things. So the physical and the spiritual and this, the practical, they all go together. So a lot of times when someone's struggling with something that is, and this is a light, this is on a light note, struggling with their mental state or they're struggling with their physical state, they really need to dig in on self-care. So a lot of things that I like to say is, I love that, if you know any of my friends, I'm a freaking water enthusiast. I love deep well water. I love natural water. I hate, like, no offense to the brands out there that do the purifying process. I love natural whole deep well water. And so drink some good water, hydrate yourself, put your feet in the dirt, you know, grounding. Watch a funny, like, I like watching funny podcasts. So if I'm having a tough time, or if I'm trying to, you know, try to keep it together, I call my little brother Micah, and I just either laugh about something in the past, or I listen to, like, a podcast that makes me laugh. And so there's a couple of
don't go to the Plain Injured podcast in that sense. So give us some podcasts that make you laugh, or one that.
Joe Rogan makes me laugh sometimes. Me a little bit. He's a little brash. Sometimes it's, like, a lot, but he still makes me, like, some of his guests make me laugh. And there's a comedian, I can't remember his name. I can send it to you after this.
Yeah, we'll throw it in the notes.
Yeah, okay. There's a comedian that I've been listening to. He's got like a mullet. He's friends with John Crist. I can't remember his name. He's literally the funny. He has his own podcast too, by the way. He's the funniest person I've ever heard, and I listen to him. So what I do is I type. Like, I have it saved in my YouTube. I type him in the mornings. I go for a walk, and I just laugh and laugh and laugh. He is amazing. John Crist is funny too, by the way.
Yeah, I know John Crist. Yeah.
Are you familiar with him?
Yeah.
I know he's had a rough go. We all, yeah. He's had a rough, really rough go, but he's still hilarious. He's still, you know, redeemable and amazing. And I still am a supporter of him, despite he's had a rough, you know, really rough go of that. And then the other person that I think is really funny, any comedians, man, on Netflix, like, I'll just go to comedy, and just, like, you know, digging up biography or whatever. So, yeah, I'll show you a couple of the ones I really like, so I can keep it a little tighter. But, yeah, man, laughter is truly the best medicine. And then just being quiet, like, for me, that's the biggest battle. So I will go sit by a tree, lock myself, you know, in a room, and just turn everything off. And I'll do that for 2, 3, 4 hours at a time. And that's always really healing. So yeah, man, that's my 3 cents.
That's beautiful. So I heard, you know, grounding yourself, drinking the real water, the well water, the good water.
Yes.
If we're fortunate enough to get your hands on that, right?
Yeah. And that is something that I would prioritize over other things. So to a fault, like, people are like, dude, just drink the sink water. If I can, I'll drink it. And I grew up drinking sink water all the time. That's all I drink. But if you can, man, there's Avion, any natural Ozarka, any natural spring water is amazing.
Fascinating. That's awesome. That's a good one. Laugh. I love that. You know, just get yourself laughing and then have some quiet time, are good starting points. And of course, there's a lot more that goes into that. So,
by quiet time, by the way, Mason, I mean nature. Like, so it can be quiet, like a library quiet, but a lot of times I just need to be out in the wilderness or fishing. Like, it needs to be somewhere where there's, like, wind or cold, or, you know, the seasons are really healing. So I just wanted to clarify that little point.
Yeah. Hey, that's money. Great, man. Well, I really appreciate you coming on the Plain Injured podcast. I feel like this is definitely one of those episodes. I get this every once in a while where it's like, we need to have you come back on maybe 6 months from now, a year from now. And we need to unpack some more stuff as God puts more stuff on your heart and you go through life and you know, realize things. And I know, you have a lot of things you're working on. We'll put some of that in the footnotes. Excited for, you know, where this goes, where this takes us. And I think at the end of the day, it's the stories and the vulnerability that you bring and that you've brought to this episode that are going to help some people. If nothing else, know that there's other people out there struggling with them, playing injured with them. So appreciate your time, man. Thanks for coming on, and grace and peace.
Grace and peace, brother. Shalom.
Our brand design and strategy is by Tessa at 5footstudios.com. You can also follow her on Instagram at 5footstudios. Our music is by Lakey Inspired. Go ahead and subscribe so that you never miss an episode, and click the 5 stars to give us a rating. And most importantly, keep playing injured.